everybody. Welcome to episode 84 of the Alexis Sale podcast. Thank you for hanging in there, and in fact, increasing in your thousands, in your millions, more and more listeners in your thousands, in your millions. We are all Paris-Dyrians.
We're all Paris Hiltons.
We're all Paris Hiltons.
We're all Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
At the march on Saturday, there was, you were there, I'm assuming.
Yes, of course.
And that was the same day that Crystal Palace won the cup, apparently.
FA Cup, yes.
And they were all marching at the same time. Yeah. It was like we could hear football chants happening off
but,
screen.
But Crystal Palace, Palestinian Solidarity Campaign had come on the march rather than watch the match. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no greater self-sacrifice than that.
Oh,
is there,
my
really?
God.
I don't know where Mark Steele, noted Crystal Palace fan, was, but they sacrificed there.
I kept going around going, this isn't a Palace march, it's a Palestine march.
That's hilarious.
I know, I'm so funny. But then it got funny because I kept saying it. My friends got really annoyed, and then it started being funny. I didn't know that. Okay. Because we were like complaining about it, but I didn't know that they were there in solidarity. Yeah. So big up and props to them, I guess.
Absolutely.
And congrats for winning a nice cup.
Well, yes, especially against, you know, a kind of team financed by
the Saudi war machine.
Yeah, not quite the Saudi war machine, but certainly the Gulf war machine. Yeah. But
is it Qatar owned?
Qatar. It's not Qatar or one of the Emirates. Funds Manchester City. Whereas I don't quite know I forget what the owner of Crystal Palace is called. It's just a local.
That's cool. And Palace is my local team. So,
yeah.
But I really don't give a single flying fuck about it.
I'm
happy for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
And congratulations to Spurs for winning the Europa Cup last night.
I thought they were really bad at the moment. Isn't that something you
were saying? Yeah, they're both. It was bizarre, really. I think they're like after the teams that get relegated, Manchester United and Spurs are the next, like, most relegatable. And yet they somehow managed to get in the Europa League, and then Spurs won, I think, with a goal that basically came off the arm of a Manchester United player.
Wow.
What does that mean
to be relegated?
Well, you go down to the championship. It's blimey, you don't know anything about football, do you?
No,
you go down. Three teams have gone down this season, Ipswich. The three teams that came up have gone back down, Ipswich.
Was that being Leicester. Demoted?
They've been demoted, yes.
Uh-huh, they've
been
okay.
demoted. Leicester, Southampton and Ipswich. Football podcasts are very. Maybe we should do football podcasts where we both struggle with, you know, the indifferent in your case and ill-informed in my case. Football podcast. Actually, we should at least.
Oh my God!
Send our support to comrade Gary Lineker, who's been the object of remorseless attention from the Israel lobby and is finally left the BBC. And he's a good guy, really. I mean, it's absurd, obviously. One of the people on the BBC board is a guy called Robbie Gibb, the BBC fucking board. Robbie Gibb was appointed by David Cameron, but the Labour Party has kept him on. Was listed for many years as the sole owner of the Jewish Chronicle. The Jewish Chronicle is a fanatically pro-genocide, pro-apartheid. Didn't used to be. I used to like the Jewish Chronicle in the old days, but it then under a guy called Stephen Pollard and then an even worse individual called Jake Wallace Simmons. And it's been censured 40 times by the feeble Ipsos, the press regulator that... for a magazine, but a newspaper that only goes out once a week is phenomenal and toothless. And also been sued four times successfully. And if you know how difficult it is to get libel damages, it's had to pay out massive libel damages.
For what?
To left-wingers, either for telling lies about them or for alleging anti-Semitism. Massive. Anyway, Robbie Gibb was listed as the sole owner for many years of the... Obviously, he didn't really own it. Somebody else did. But he listed for many years as the sole owner and is now, I think, a director of the Jewish Chronicle. So this is a... This is a man on the BBC board who is the was the sole owner, supposedly, of a pro-genocide, pro-apartheid, pro-ethnic cleansing newspaper for many years. And, you know, Gary Lineker retweets something with an unfortunate, I don't know. I don't know the
problem. There was a rat emoji.
Emoji, yes. I mean,
next to a video. So it wasn't part of the video he shared.
Really?
It was, like, pasted on top of it.
Right. I mean, tropes, they're useful things, tropes, aren't they? They're like, tropes are a thing that's a bit like another thing, and therefore you can accuse people of, you know, thought crime. It's ridiculous.
You could
easily
say, oh, no, they're just calling Zionists rats because they're deceitful, you know, but...
Yeah,
it was used in Nazi propaganda and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, although, I mean, Squawk Box has got loads of examples of Zionists and their supporters of using rat imagery themselves to refer to the Palestinians, and that for some reason is all right. Anyway, big thanks to big heartfelt well done for Gary Lineker. Your thought will go on. And if you would like to include our podcast on your massive podcast empire, we would be more than grateful.
Yeah.
To get to, but we love you anyway.
Sweet, lovely guy. He's going to be fine as well, you know.
Oh yeah, he doesn't need, you know, he doesn't need the BBC. He doesn't need, and hopefully he can, you know, he is a voice of sanity. Maybe he can. Maybe he's the one to lead our left wing party. You know, I was saying it wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
We need a white male with a northern accent, or he's a Midlands accent, to lead our left wing party. Maybe he could do it. I think his politics are more centrist. But also, we have yesterday, the Metropolitan Police, I think, or the CPS, are charging one of NECAP with terrorism or with supporting terrorism for supposedly waving a
Hezbollah flag at a show in Kentish Town, I think.
Yep. And it made me just reflect on, again, with Gary Lineker, you know, the kind of aggravation, you know, just how much Israel costs us, you know, how much the Israel lobby costs us in its negative effect on our free speech, you know, and also, you know, I mean, they weren't the sole reason, but also, you know, the only chance of a decent politician in Jeremy Corbyn, that the Israel lobby was very front and center in the efforts to sabotage him, that Israel costs us, the Israel lobby costs us so much.
We can't do anything. They've got we can't have anything. I mean, they, you know, they've got unlimited funds. They've got so much resources. They've got, you know, evil is one of the most tenacious and persistent and powerful forces, energies, you know, if something, because they are by nature deceitful and selfish, and so they will do what it takes to get what they want, you know.
Yeah, and that's all they think about. That's all bad people think about, is
they don't think about
doing bad things. Whereas, of course, left wing people, we're all like, oh, well, if we do this, how does this affect?
Don't want to put anyone out.
Kid. Oh, no,
would you mind if we?
Oh,
we need
permission
to do a protest.
If we could just storm the telephone exchange, would you be annoyed if we just seize the
just
levers?
Spud guns, promise.
We said because we're thoughtful, because we're nice. We worry about, there's a rare nest of rare harriers on the roof of the telephone exchange. We can't fire artillery at it. Oh dear. Anyway, at least we're the good guys. You know, they're the bad guys.
You know, so if you put a fucking coconut on a placard, you literally have to go to court and start ruin your life, do a whole fucking court case and shit. Yeah. Whereas Zionists will go on TV and just barefaced lie
to the
public
all the time.
Presenting it as fact.
Yes.
They will.
They lie in their lies. I think somebody brilliant once said.
ruin people's careers.
Yeah.
And kill tens of thousands of children.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Not losing any jobs, not fucking getting any consequences.
Freaking BBC. Yep.
Sickening. And they'll come second in Eurovision.
Well, that's also, yes, it was Eurovision. I mean, that's another effect. I mean, because they plan to rig the vote, and we're voting from Israelis, and Israeli supporters were using multiple credit cards, as I understand it, to vote all around the world. And they clearly rigged the public vote.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that they cost. I mean, I don't care about Eurovision, but I mean, they've poisoned that as well. They've soiled Eurovision.
Something that's meant to be like cheeky and fun and silly.
Yeah.
They don't even need to rig it, because anyone who's a Palestine supporter just simply didn't watch it or call or care or vote or anything. And then all the Zionists obviously are just going to vote for Israel. So it's it was doomed. It was not doomed.
No, but it's going to fated. It's another thing that they poison, isn't it? You know, it's another thing that they've kind of
it's disgusting.
Politicized.
The obvious things, how can they ban Russia and not Israel?
Yeah.
And Israel's not even in fucking Europe. And it's the irony of Israel is that they're dying to be considered European. They're the only white country in the Middle East. Sorry, the only democracy in the Middle East. That's what I meant.
That's not even true.
Yeah, it's not.
But yes, but also to come back to kneecap. It's also, as I think many people have written about, the ludicrously wide parameters of the British Terror Act, that you can, that clearly Hezbollah, you know, is no. I mean, we have people from Sinn Féin, you know, whose political wing, the IRA, you know, killed British troops and killed British civilians. The founders of Israel killed British troops and British, you know, killed British troops, killed civilians in bombing attacks, but that's all being forgiven. So the definition of who is a terrorist, I think, is entirely fluid. And I have a friend who is a senior diplomat in the Foreign Office who said the only reason that Hezbollah was designated a terrorist organization was because of pressure from the Israelis. Hezbollah has only got one enemy, that is Israel. I know you're not particularly fond of them.
They are murderers.
Well,
they're fuckheads. They kill civilians.
They do.
And
but,
they kill like Palestinian and Syrian civilians intentionally.
And so do, yes. But that's, you know, that's they use, I mean, the definition of terrorism seems to be people who use force for political ends who aren't us, really. And whatever you think, they have no. Britain is not their enemy. They are only, their enemies are within the Middle East.
Yeah.
And why is a member of a Northern Ireland rap group being prosecuted for waving their flag? It is absurd. And again, it's another. It's obviously about paying a price for speaking
it's
out.
It's a fucking artist doing art. You know, he's clearly making
that,
a parallel, drawing a parallel between Hezbollah and the IRA, and making a wider political point. And just being a punk musician, you know, it's so fucked.
Anyway, you know,
and it makes me think. You know, we do this, and this goes out to the public.
Yeah, and we in no way. Well, you just said something. You'd be negative about it. We could get.
Who knows what they'll handpick from everything we've ever said?
Yeah,
and twist it and say, "Oh, this is a terrorist."
Oh, all kinds of things. Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway. It's like we're just two idiots chatting shit and being, like doing our art. Somehow this is actually art that we're making right now.
Yes.
This microphone is my paintbrush.
But it shows how the Labour government particularly is, you know, is keen to chill free speech with its wide framings of the Terrorism Act. And
it's the second time you said wide. Because their next gig is the Wide Awake Festival. I think it's this coming weekend. Tomorrow.
And it's not being cancelled at this moment, is it?
No, and it's at the end of my road in Rockwell Park. And I'm part of the I'm part of the Save Brockwell Park movement.
Yeah.
I've like signed the petition. That's all.
That's a mixed. Yes. Well, I do vaguely think that the use of public parks for rock festivals is not to be encouraged. Really.
It's like a month and a half that can't go to my local park. It's disgusting. Yeah. And then when the fences finally come down, the grass is all but gone.
Yeah.
And you know, the nature and the wildlife there, God knows what the damage done to all that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
It's grim.
It's a bad thing.
And it is one of the most beautiful parks I've ever seen.
Yeah. But maybe we should just let Kneecap perform and nobody else.
Yeah. And that's the conflict for me. It's like, I want them to have a headliner.
Yeah.
A good show. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Just let Kneecap.
Interesting to see. So anyway, we've just come off a run of, was it three live shows at the Museum of Comedy. Yeah.
Feels weird not having scores of people in front of us right now.
No, there's my house.
Yeah.
It's party central all the time.
Wow. I've got my back on my fruit bowl. I've got my fruit bowl.
Oh, it's still depleted. There's only oranges, if I look.
There's one brown banana in there as well.
All right.
It's a bit depressed, yeah. It's been nice. So how does it feel for you?
Yeah.
Now, contrast live show and Zencaster recorded show.
Well, I think obviously you have to be a bit more, you have to be a bit more on the button than particularly this podcast. You have to, you know, because you're facing the audience, you have to be more on your toes, really. Beautiful, beautiful atmosphere, I think, that, you know, just really, and it, you know, that, I mean, it's only a small room, but it's I think the last two were sold out, weren't they? The first, you know, it's slowly built, really, and it's something that we want to build on. We've put in another block of, I don't know if we quite confirmed them yet, but we put another block in July and August on a Sunday. We thought we'd go for Sundays. I hope that builds up. And then also, if I think, you know, why not, you know, try it in a larger room as well, do it at the Leicester Square Theatre as well as the...
There's talks about doing that once a year.
Yeah, we're going on the road. We're going hopefully to Liverpool and Shoreham and University of Kent. It's easy, you know, it's nice. It's, you know, it's a way to interact with the public without having to...
gotten used to the feeling, to the idea of stepping out there with little to nothing prepared?
Yeah, well, I was never not used to it, really. I don't know whether there'll ever come a point where I run out of things to say, really. I mean, so far it's just kind of, I've got the odd thing in my mind that I want to talk about, but, see if we can keep that doing it, keep going indefinitely. But it just, there is a sense of community as well, isn't there, that you feel?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a woman who come from Derry. There was a guy who come from Leeds. Yeah. And so perhaps more people will do that, you know, come and just to sort of see us. And then
you reminded me.
Chat afterwards.
Steve came. That might have been the Leeds guy. Is Newbury near Leeds?
No.
No. Newbury, that's in London. Anyway, he told me about this event.
In the southeast.
He told me about this event on the 25th of June called Are We There Yet? There's the flyer for the Patreon subscribers.
Corn Exchange, Newbury.
Yeah. I told him I'd give it a shout out on the show. Are We There Yet? Takes a light-hearted approach to some tough issues, whilst the elites siphon up the wealth and appear to play with our rights like a game. The rest of us are left wondering, will it ever change? It's a play. And then there'll be a Q&A afterwards.
All right, okay, all right.
A comedy, multilingual storytelling, absurd spectacle. The play delivers a message of hope, unity, and compassion. Steve was really nice. He's a Patreon member.
Nice. Yeah. I like a show in a corn exchange.
Yeah?
Tip the balance with me. If I see something and it's in a corn exchange, I'll go and see it. But I'll only pay in corn.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It says it right on the door, mate.
There's a hop exchange in Borough. In fact, I knew a bloke. I think he must be dead now. It was a hop trader.
I think in Damascus, we have the daughter exchange. Sorry. Shut up, that was funny. I really appreciate everyone who came to the live show. It was a really nice sense of community, a nice mix of Patreon members, non-Patreon, and even some people who'd never heard the podcast.
Yeah.
Hopefully new listeners to the show.
Yeah.
And that last show where that was fully sold out, we had the least prepared, and I found it really exciting. And yeah, like you said, there's always something to talk about. And but there was the odd moment where we'd like catch each other's eye, and we knew that neither of us had anything. And then we'd have to pull a new topic out of our asses. And it was fun. And I think the feedback I got is that people really enjoy that. That's the podcast experience as well.
Yeah,
several people have said to me that's what they've come for. Is to see that excitement and to to know that we're all on the same page. No one knows what's coming next, including us. And that's the podcast experience. And thanks for all the lovely feedback and comments.
More and more. And, you know, we keep, say we've got a block of another four, and then, you know, ones around the country. And it's easier than doing. It's easier than going out and doing stand-up, which is too, you know, it's just too nerve-wracking, really. I find.
Can I just mention, seeing as I mentioned feedback, it'd be nice to just remind people your feedback really matters, and it really helps the show. If you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to this.
Yes, our listeners are still very bad about that, aren't they?
We've had 545 review ratings.
They're good then. All right.
Yeah, they're not bad.
There's a guy on YouTube. The listens to like ratio is still a bit.
I love
tragic.
Him. Every week on the comments, he's like, "Only 15% of viewers have liked this video."
Yeah.
Oh, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Support Talan Alexi. I'm like, go on, brother. Yes, please.
His name's
Rob, I think.
We appreciate your work as well, friend.
Yes, comrade. Salute. Yeah.
But
like Zapata mustache. Oh, could that possibly be your friend?
No, it's a type of mustache.
Oh, it is. Yeah, but your friend who illustrated
he's called Zarate. He's not called
Zarate.
Zapata means shoe.
Zapata mustache on Apple Podcasts wrote a 5-star review. Long time Patreon and worth every penny. Although we get nothing in return, which isn't true anymore. You get to see the full video episode, the full video podcast every week. But then the podcast is enough. A podcast with varied and interesting guests. Love hearing snippets of Alexi's career, and Talal steers the conversation along interesting topics. Thank you, Zapata Mustache. Brails writes, "This is what cool is, comrades. Real left politics, funny comedy, and films, a trifecta of cool."
Yeah.
One more. Alan says, "Really enjoying this podcast. Talal is doing a 5-star job steering the ship. Thanks, guys. I've been a fan of Alexi since childhood. Being a Scouser, he reminded me of my mad uncle Tom. One of my favorite ever sketches from the young ones is when he'd done an impression of Benito Mussolini and sung a ridiculous song called Funny Noises? No, I think it was Stupid Noises. It would be brilliant if Alexi could reenact the scene on the podcast."
I can't do that. I could do the one, what was it? It's where I used to do my stand-up act. I'd do the St. Winifred School Choir. Mm-hmm. We were a chart-topping act for a while. It was a group of tots from a school somewhere up north, Oldham or somewhere. St. Winifred School Choir.
Are they the ones who did Grandma, We Love You?
Yes, that's right.
Oh.
So it's a triple impersonation. So it was George Formby, Lancashire entertainer, doing the St. Winifred School Choir, singing about Mussolini. And what did they go? "Oh, Mussolini, we love you. We love you a lot. When you left your home for a wander around Rome, you were hung from a lamppost and shot. Oh, I'm hanging from the lamppost at the corner of the square." So that's that is many forgotten entertainers there. St. Winifred School Choir, where are they now? And George Formby. Turned out nice again, ain't it? Oh, I'm hanging from the lamppost at the corner of the street in case a certain little lady goes by. Oh, me. Yeah, there you go.
Because the bit you did in the Young Ones was from your stand-up, wasn't it? About being mistaken for Miss
Meany
in a nightclub, right?
Yeah.
And is that actually true?
No. I
mean, no one ever, obviously. No, I mean, did anyone ever say you looked like him?
It doesn't. Yeah, well, I can't remember where it came from, but I just realised that I did. I don't want the beard now, did I? I don't look like him necessarily anymore, but I looked a bit like Mussolini. So I would, it was a range of bizarre impersonations that I used to do in the end of my act. Bertolt Brecht was the other one, and Benito Mussolini. You know, it's just the people I happened to look like.
Yeah, Brecht was one. Yeah, that's it.
But I liked that it was so, you know, so absurd even then to be doing, even in the '80s, to be doing impersonations of Mussolini. So.
Iconic, man.
Yeah, it was iconic scene. I like the stupidity of it.
You're like a police constable, isn't it? And Neil comes in to get
I think it's in Money, or is it where they're all broke and Neil wants to join the police.
Neil wants to get a job, and it's got one of the funniest bits when he like smokes the bong and then instantly just shoots off into the sky. Yeah. And you walk off and sing Stupid Noises, which I want to adopt. It is unofficially the name of my podcast production company, Stupid Noises Podcast. I'm working on a jingle. We're going to hear that at the beginning or end of every episode.
Right.
I'm going to kind of me and my friend are going to recreate the song and make a jingle.
I'm sorry, because I spend a lot of time thinking about what I will call my production company if I ever have a production company, which I never will. That's one of the things I spend the most time thinking about.
Well, why don't we be co-owners of this production company?
All right. But does that kind of cost me money?
No, I'll do it all on the cheap. Don't worry.
All right. So we've got this podcast.
We've got my brother's podcast, Arms House to Your Mum's House. And soon, hopefully, me and Sammy Aboberde are working on a podcast idea.
Well, it's a good name, Stupid.
Yeah, it's a good name for a podcast company, isn't it? Stupid Noises.
Yeah, it's very good. I wish I'd thought of it. Well, I did think of it in a sense.
Yeah, you did.
But you stole it off me. But I do spend an awful lot of time thinking about my microcosm entertainment. That is my good morning, microcosm entertainment. How may I direct your call?
That's right.
Mr. Sailor's on a Zoom at the moment, but he'll call you back in 5 minutes. Hello, Microcosm Entertainment. Number 7595 La Brea Boulevard, Los Angeles, Hollywood 7290. That'd be our headquarters.
What would you be producing?
Well, we'd have several divisions, obviously. Movie division. The Matt Damon story. We have a podcast division, obviously, because that's like, you know. TV, a lot of different series.
Constantly pitching. We've got a pitch for meeting
every week. Netflix. We've got a series. We're in discussion with Apple to do a series.
A series called Lex, and it's a fictionalized Lex, version of you.
Yeah,
and it's just a very kind of grounded, down to earth sitcom of you living your everyday life and all the funny
and all my crazy friends and my crazy Arab friend. Talal will be played by somebody else, but not you,
obviously. Yeah,
you play by an Italian guy.
I can't get a fucking break. by an Italian guy. Hey, listen, I'm back in Assyria. We know how to make a podcast.
What else have we got? The George Formby story. It's a series about George Formby.
There's
making that for Paramount Plus.
An interview series.
Yeah.
Strangers on a Palestine March. And it's
just
marching and interviewing people at the march.
Good idea.
Good one, isn't it? You should expand strangers on a train and do it in, change the word train to other things.
Yeah, it doesn't really work. We've tried everything.
Strangers in a taxi.
It only works in a train.
Oh. We could do it. We could produce a new Eurovision Song Contest alternative for the progressive left wing pro Palestinian crowd.
Entirely just featuring kneecap.
Every song is kneecap. They're just waving a different flag every time.
Yeah.
And it's not a Hezbollah flag.
Well, no. You're coming around tomorrow and we're going to film we're going to film like a TikTok video where I dance and then break off and explain the theory of Marxism, economic and philosophical theory of Marxism. Yeah, I'd dance a bit more. I don't know what track we're going to dance to yet, but I've been thinking
just
a lot about
whatever the most trending song is.
All right.
Should we just do that? That's kind of got to be the bit, isn't
it? Is that how you do it? Well, if you have to be able to dance, it has to inspire me to dance. But yes, I suppose so.
Well, yeah, because that's what also helps you get hits on these apps.
Right. Okay.
Is that you're using a song that everyone wants to hear and everyone wants to see different people's take on.
And so that, how do we do the copyright with that? Do you just play it and then?
Oh, it's all intertwined into the software. It's they've all got the licenses sorted.
All right.
So
do that tomorrow.
So you're gonna like.
So I'll dance.
You definitely want to do the dance, pause, say something, dance again. You don't want to.
I think so. Well, that makes.
You know what? It's a format you created. It's your thing.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it. Let's not.
It might be humiliating.
Yeah, are you not worried that people are going to think you're pathetically grabbing at meme culture and trying to latch onto the youth?
Well, because I am.
Yeah.
So they'd be right if they thought that. But I'm doing it in a good cause.
All right, you need to prepare, you know, the little chunks
me
about
bits,
Marxism.
Me chunks,
you
yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? It's
like,
a good
I
idea.
I can't do that like off the top of my head. Fuck off.
Well, we tried it on the stage and you only had one. Remember?
Yeah.
You ran out. You didn't have a second thing to say.
I did.
So we were forced to end the show.
Yeah.
And that was another thing. That was the first show, is that we had this big kind of physical moment that was perfect to end the show. Like, you did the dance and I went, that's been our show, everyone. Thanks so much. And everyone went crazy. And then it's not a thing you can force, though, is it? Because I thought that's a great way to end the show.
Yeah.
Hopefully the next one will have a big thing to finish on.
Yeah.
But I realized that you can just end the show without doing that. But
yeah,
it was magical when that happens, I guess.
There's also a video just gone up, which I am part of. Don't buy apartheid. It's about boycotting Israeli goods. It went up, and then I think I got an email saying they've misspelled Juliet Stevenson's name, so it's gone off again. But I'll go back when they've got a name right.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that.
Oh, we got Juliet Stevenson's name wrong.
It might be a good idea to batch film a few of these. So think of, one could be about Marxism, and maybe think of two or three.
Colonialism.
Yeah, and then we can slowly release them over a period of time.
Yeah. If they don't, but I'll tell you now, if it's not like, if it doesn't trend, if it doesn't, I'm only doing it if it's dead popular.
Yes.
If it just does look like a pathetic fat old man kind of wiggling about, saying incomprehensible things. Well, to a track from Teddy Swims.
Maybe I might see if my brother's available to come and help us film it, because he's very good at all this.
Right.
He's so good at producing and editing videos. It blows my mind, actually.
All right. Let's do that then.
Co-op. You mentioned boycott.
Yeah, general. It's also, we are on this morning, during the night, in Washington, D.C., to American, I think, but people who worked at the Israeli embassy was shot dead by, I suspect somebody's been driven mad by seeing slaughter on their phone all the time, which is, but the immediate, the despicable efforts by then Israeli foreign minister and their spokespeople to then blame, you know, Israel's enemies for this, creating this atmosphere rather than their own genocidal activities is, you know, it's repellent, really. Anyway, so that, I mean, one of the things they've been getting outraged about is that the co-op has voted to stop stocking all, I think, Israeli products.
Yes.
And I think that's a really good thing. And hope that more stores, you know, there is, I mean, I don't know. It's,
we've yet to see if it will actually happen.
I don't know. I mean, I think that will happen. I think the people at the top of the co-op are decent people.
Okay, good.
That will happen. You know, you censor certain people. I mean, that it has to get to this before the wind changes, that people see the true nature of Israel, the true genocidal, fascist nature of Israel. That, you know, has to, murder, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians, use starvation to see, and to see the arrogance and the vile nature of Israel and its spokespeople. You know, it's that it has to, this has to happen before people even start, you know, in Parliament, start issuing mild words, but perhaps the, I don't know. I mean, it's either, I don't know if it's false dawn or if the wind is changing.
Well, if Piers Morgan is calling it a genocide, then
is it? Yeah, well,
things have gone upside down.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. It's, how far can they push us? And I wrote last night, you know, someone posted, you know, I just saw a Palestinian child with a hollowed out head, the dead body of a toddler that looked so tiny on a stretcher, a little girl with her head cracked open, doctors removing shrapnel from a baby's face. My entire timeline is just an endless stream of horror. And I resonated with me because that's so fucking true every single day. So I responded every day, every single day. I swear it's probably traumatized me or us more than 100 pandemics and lockdowns that people were so traumatized by. You know, we can only wait and see what long-term effects this will have on our collective societal psyche. You know, like, who can we ever trust again? Who can we ever trust to lead us, to make decisions for us if this has gone this far? And then I carried on. I nearly screamed at my colleague the other day when they told me they were going to McDonald's for lunch. Right. And they invited me. They said, do I want to come? And I just fucking shut down. I nearly screamed at their face in a work environment. Yeah. I just bit my tongue. I said, no. And I walked away from it.
Yeah.
So don't ever tell me you're going to McDonald's, please, if you're my friend. But like,
nope.
You know, that that kind of reaction, it's the first time I've been face to face with someone who, like, I'm hoping they're just blissfully unaware of any Zionist connection with McDonald's.
Yeah.
But, you know, someone I consider a friend and a colleague, I nearly fucking screamed their head off. And that was a trigger. That was like I'd been triggered.
Yeah.
And this is from the trauma of seeing this every day. And how can anyone support this financially or politically? And
what the fuck
has it done to us? Yeah. We don't know yet what this has done to us.
It's true. The trauma is ongoing. And it's, you know, for anybody with any humanity, it's really deep and long lasting, really. And again, that's another price they have made us pay, that they have destroyed our serenity. That country, that terrible country, has destroyed our serenity.
It's just like we're surrounded by fascists, racists, cunts. Suddenly, you know, if you know, they're calling it, the racist idiots are calling it a white genocide in South Africa and yet ignoring Palestine.
Yeah.
People going up in arms and crying, hearts bleeding for Ukraine and flags in windows everywhere, Ukrainian flags. And why have I reached a point where I resent that? You know, I should be, you know, supporting anyone who's fighting war or against war and killing. But I see a Ukrainian flag and my instant thought is, where's your Palestine flag? You know, it is fucking destroying us, you know?
Yeah.
And we've seen people burn themselves.
Yeah.
Alive.
My thought of that has made me think, yeah, guy set fire to himself, you know?
Like someone cracks and goes into an Israeli embassy with a gun, you know? It's like, the world is going fucking crazy. No, there's
just, I mean, this is all the price they've made us pay, you know, and they need to.
And yet you still have, like, Jimmy Carr go to the British Museum and host the Israeli birthday party.
What's her name? With the other, the lesser of two eagles. It was the Maria Eagle. MP for God, I'm Garston in Liverpool. Vile.
What are you thinking? How much must they have paid him? Because if he supports Israel or not, he knows what that will do to his public image. You're going to instantly split your audience in half. Or
I don't think he cares.
Doesn't give a fuck, does he?
No, he probably doesn't. I don't know how political or politicized he is, really. Really, I don't know.
How politicized you have to be to know that that's fucking ridiculous.
Yep.
So now we have to boycott the British Museum, as if we didn't have enough reasons to, but that they would host that event.
It's a tone deaf on their part, say the least.
Can you know, they were obviously paid a buttload of money.
Presumably.
Have you ever hosted an event you regret? Or done a gig and like stood there and go, oh shit, what have I done?
No, because Linda usually stops me.
You're so lucky to have her. She's incredible.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, you all do you? She's, no, you're not. I don't think.
It's BP, Alexi. You're not doing a gig for BP.
Yeah. I don't. No. I think she's usually stopped me before I've been inveigled into supporting anything dodgy. But yeah, you know, yeah.
Yeah. We all need a Linda in our lives, man. You're blessed. I've made myself really sad. I ask you for your advice? Do you remember a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, we said we were talking about we need to create a hit Palestine song?
Yes.
That will become incredibly catchy and everyone will fucking love it and it will help spread the message, you know?
Yeah.
So I've had this idea in my head for like a year and a half now, but I couldn't quite get the lyrics. And with the help of Sami Abawarde, I think I've kind of landed on something. By the way, big up previous guest, Sami Abawarde. He's got a big show coming up, his new hour. It's called Peace de Resistance on the 31st of May.
We're going. Where is it?
We're going. It's at the
Teatro Technis.
Yeah, that's the one. Teatro Technis.
It's near my house. It's Andy.
Oh, good. Here we go. Yeah, Teatro Technis, 31st of May. It's also on the 26th and 27th of May. Please support the dude. He's a Palestinian comedian who is out there, who has, I think, I can't wait for you to see him. This could be a complete failure, like the last time I took you to see a Palestinian comic, but he has got, you're going to see how it actually is done, to do politics and anger and comedy all rolled together. I'm going to show you the amazing artwork of the flyer for the viewers, for the Patreon viewers.
And look at his face. Real Arabic?
Yeah. Maybe he'll get arrested for that. All right, 26th, 27th, 31st.
You're asking about a song.
So, yes, so my idea is a parody, and I don't know why no one's ever done it yet, but a parody of the most catchy viral song of all time.
Right.
It's Sweet Caroline.
Right, I hate that song,
But you say Free Palestine.
Oh, right.
And then what we have so far, We will soon return for good, for good, for good, for good. You're out of time. Buh, buh, buh. We'll take back our neighborhood. So we need to workshop this. People out there, I'm making this an open forum now. We need to rewrite the lyrics of Sweet Caroline, sing it at the marches, do it on your social medias, at the football stadiums, and make it go fucking massive. Make it free Palestine.
I don't know who the... I mean, when I did... When I did... I played that funky music, Jewish Boy.
Yeah.
Which I did on my album, and studio album, I think, and then I did in Alexis L. Stoff. It turned out my top team of lawyers managed to arrange it so that I had to pay all royalties to a band called Wild Cherry, who originally recorded Play That Funky Music, White Boy. And I got to keep none of so I don't know how that works. With, I mean, it's a Neil Diamond song, isn't it?
Originally? It's a Neil Diamond song, yeah.
I wonder who wrote it.
Well, that's only if you release it and make money off of it. You can't control people in the streets.
Singing
what they
sing. No, that's true. All right. Yeah.
So, have you got any instant reaction to that? Sweet Free Palestine.
I hate that song so much.
Me too. I fucking hate the song, but it's so popular. And if we made it Free Palestine, maybe we'd learn to love the song.
Yeah. So you'd either people with the other people stop singing it, which either way, it's a win-win, really, isn't it? People at rugby matches might stop singing it if they thought to be singing about Palestine. So that's a win. Yes, I heartily approve this project. Well, I don't want to think of any of the words, but anybody wants to contribute to the lyrics.
I'm looking online for Neil Diamond Palestine to see if he's made any comments on Palestine. But I have seen that a couple people have obviously thought of this idea as well.
All right.
Nothing massive. So it's an obvious thing. Free Palestine, Sweet Caroline. Let's make it happen, please.
Okay.
I'm sick of hearing that song in pubs and football clubs and all that.
Oh, so much.
So let's change the words to something we agree with. Send in your suggestions. Comment on the YouTube. Write it in your Apple podcast review. Send me a message on Patreon, put it in the Patreon chat rooms. If you want to support the show, help the show out, keep me in a job, then go to patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. That's patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. We have two chat rooms in there. There's a chat room where we can all just chat and build a little community. And there's another one with questions for you, direct questions to you, which we'll get to in a second. We also post video versions of every podcast episode on the Patreon. You can see the live shows we did at the Museum of Comedy and any other bits that we come up with. I might put some behind the scenes stuff of this viral meme we're going to make tomorrow on our Patreon. And I need to let listeners know, do not sign up to our Patreon through the Apple app. If you have the Patreon app on your iPhone, don't sign up to our Patreon there, because Apple add a fucking fee and they take take that. They add like £3 to it or something, and that all just goes to Apple. So do not use the Patreon app to support us. I love you. Please use your web browser and go to patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast and sign up there. And then use your app to log in and do whatever you want to. But don't use the app to sign up. I beg you, they take a cut. And anyone who has done it, I'm really sorry. Cancel your membership and re-sign up on the website, because you'll pay less and you won't be giving money to Apple for no fucking reason.
No.
I'm glad I got that out.
That
came to my attention and fucking shook me to my core.
Yeah.
Selfish assholes, Apple. Patreon questions. Michael Sellers asks, I wonder if Alexi has ever seen John Carpenter's They Live. Possible film club watch? Film club. We haven't done a film club in ages.
We've been doing live shows. No, I haven't. No.
The first hour of it is so slow. It's an iconic film. It's the film where the guy gets the sunglasses, and he can, when he puts the sunglasses on, he sees the real world.
Oh, I have seen that, I think. Yeah, it's a really good film.
And there's like demons
everywhere.
I didn't
know that was John Carpenter.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
What's your favorite John Carpenter film?
I don't know. Is that a John Carpenter one with the set in space?
In space? Yeah. He did The Thing. He did Escape from New York. He did Assault on Precinct 13, which is stunning.
Right, iconic.
The space one. I'm looking. He did Halloween.
Don't like horror
Big
films.
Trouble in Little China. I can't see any space movies he's done. Forgive me.
I have to think of something else then. Somebody else.
Oh, there is a film called Dark Star.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's really good. Oh, I really liked it at the time.
Never seen this. Sci-fi comedy, a satiric look at the problems experienced by a crew of bumbling astronauts on a mission to destroy rogue planets.
Yeah, I think it came before, you know, kind of steampunk and all that. It's a, I think it's a very original film, you know, that, you know, either predated or influenced a lot of other films, you know, Alien and what have you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Micro budget.
Yes, it's very cheap.
$60,000 was the budget.
Good God. Fuck. That was a few years ago, but nevertheless.
1974. That's pennies. That's very, that must have been like his first movie or something. Even like
I don't know. Let's look into this. John Carpenter's Dark Star. Though.
Do you want to make that our film club?
I don't know. I'll think about it. It's a mighty responsibility.
It is.
When I'm not thinking about what name my production company, I think about what I'm going to choose for the film club. Weighs heavily on me.
Well, we need to decide by next week, because the week after that officially should be the film club. Okay. Hey, I saw something interesting, actually. This very week, Alexei, marked the 46th birthday of the Comedy Store.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know this?
No, I didn't. There was events for, like, I've attended events where there's like the 30th and then the 40th. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not Don a Ward. Milestone.
Yeah, yeah. Day. I mean, probably if Don's still alive at the 50th, he'll have a party, which will be 2029, I suppose. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, and for 4 years. If you go on the official Comedy Store London Instagram, they did a nice post about it and featuring. Look at that.
It's a young Alexei with hair.
It's young you with hair.
Yeah, and before I was wearing the suit as well.
Yeah, you were just wearing a jumper, heaven forfend. And it says, celebrating 46 years of laughter, in May 1979, Don Ward, founder, CEO, and executive producer. Do you remember this person, Don Ward?
Yeah, no, Don, yeah.
Still a friend of yours?
He's always been very, he's always been very, you know, he's always acknowledged my place in that, you know, my place in the founding of the Comedy Store. He wouldn't have his house in the south of France if it wasn't for me. So I kept the place going. No, he's always said I was central to its, you know, the birth of, you know, the new British comedy, really. No, he's always been good. He's sort of edited. He did have a partner, Peter Rosengard, who he's edited out.
In May 1979, Don Ward opened the Comedy Store in the Old Gargoyle nightclub in Dean Street, Soho. Mm. He had been inspired by a trip the previous year to see the new comedy clubs in New York and LA. They were producing observational comedy and poking fun at the political scene and the establishment. This was so refreshing and stimulating. His aim and dream was to recreate the same in London. As an ex-comedian and now a producer, owner, he wanted to present something different in his venue, and a complete evening of alternative comedy seemed ideal. 46 years later, the Comedy Store continues to be a hotbed of comic talent where you can see the stars of today and tomorrow perform, as well as established circuit acts. We also give open spots and up-and-coming acts to help them develop their skills. Happy birthday to us. Also in the imagery, so on the top left is this gargoyle club. On the top right, you got Aid and Rick pulling funny faces. And in the middle, in between all those pictures, is the set list for the first opening night.
Show me again.
I'll read it to you. But look, there's this, the original set list.
That's not my writing, but yeah.
There's some scrawlings on it.
Yeah.
Running order. Saturday, 19th of May, 1979. The first compare for the first part of the first night is Alexei Sale. First act ups is someone called Lee Corns. I want you to tell me if you remember these people and tell me a
Lee
couple.
Lee Corns still going, I think.
Okay. David English was second up.
David English, yes, was he played a lot of cricket. Sort of posh English guy. Very dubious material. Yeah.
Tom, some of the writing, some of the typing is smudged here. So, Tom Tickell.
He was the financial correspondent for the like the Times or something, and he was doing it kind of on a dare, so he'd have something to write about. Again, his material was not. I don't remember it being particularly good, but he wrote a quite interesting article, I think, on the opening night. It's hard to imagine now how revolutionary this thing was, a comedy club, you know.
Yeah.
In Britain.
Were these just like 5 minute spots?
Yeah. Well, I doubt if they got through that long, really, because there was a gong that people, everybody was.
Oh, there was a gong night from the beginning.
It was, from the beginning, there was a huge gong. And I think Peter Rosengard, the guy called Billy the Kid, who was very pretty with sort of cherubic blonde curls. And he was actually the lover of a woman called Bubbles Rothermere, who owned the Daily Mail, or his family owned the Daily Mail. I can't remember now. And he'd been sent out to get, like, I think a spotlight to get people off, you know. Flash. But he'd come back with this gigantic gong, I mean, massive gong. And so the audience would scream gong, and then I would come on and bang this gong, and the act would have to get off.
Fucking hell, that's amazing.
I know. Oh, did you not know that? No, well, that...
Because they do the King Gong night, which is once a month, I think.
At the Comedy Store?
Yeah.
It was there from the first night, and it just added. I mean, it was the atmosphere was fucking insane enough anyway, and the gong only made it worse, really.
So this gong night is part of the tradition of the Comedy Store.
Yes, yes.
Because obviously the average night there now, there's no gong, but the point of the gong night, for people who don't know, is on a Monday, so it's on their quiet night, and they do this really exciting, but it gets fucking full every time.
Right.
Because of the gong show. And you have all these comedians sign up. I've done it. I did it in November, I think. And you have to try and get to 5 minutes. And if you get to 5 minutes, you get through to the final. And if the audience vote, they see some people in the audience have cards. And if they hold up a red card, if everyone holds a red card up, they gong you off. I was the only person who's ever been begged by the crowd to bring him back on. Because I had the audience against me from the start because I had a guitar with me. And so that instantly divides the audience. And I was like a third of the way through a song, and I got gonged off, and there was uproar, and they were like, bring him back, let him finish, let him. They were chanting like that, and then Mick Ferry said, all right, fine, fucking, we'll let him finish. And they brought me back on stage to finish my song, and I got to 4:58. I finished the song.
No!
And then I got voted off 2 seconds before the fucking limit. But what a way to fucking lose. Like, that was such an incredible night. All right, back onto the lineup. So who was that? Who was that we just mentioned? Tom Tickell. All right, from the Times. Okay. Bill Beckett.
No.
Was fourth up.
Fuck that was, no.
Mickey Mills.
Some Cockney, I think he's, you know, it was a mistake. It didn't last very long. You know, racist materials. Can't remember.
Someone called Alexi Sale was on set.
He was back. Yeah, well, I was on in between every act. I mean, I mean, it's the Gong was interesting actually because it taught me something very early on, which was that that some people, you know, it's not question material. It's just some people are hated by the audience from the get go. Really, It's just something that they emanate even before they speak that the audience doesn't like. And with other people, there is, you know. The audience takes them right away, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, you need that. And
if you're on the back foot, you need
that kind of, that confidence, really. And I think it's partly about commanding the space. I mean, there's that, you know, there's that Leonardo da Vinci drawing of a man, the sort of circle of a man in a kind of bubble. And I think I often think of that as you have to command that space. It's true both of martial arts, I think, and of being a performer, that you have to completely command that space, which is the extent of your arms, as it were. Within that, you have to be completely untouchable within that kind of circle. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Little tip there.
Yeah, lovely. That's very philosophical. All right, Adam Date got crossed out. Maybe he was a no-show.
Maybe.
Paul Goodman with a guitarist.
Oh, yeah. I think he was in a folk duo.
It says, comes on by himself, intros himself.
Yeah. Demanding. Did he? Fuck you. All right.
And then Bob Paynton comes on as the next compare.
Bob Paynton owned a string of pizza, the Chicago Pizza Pie Company. He said to me, he took over the second half. It was about 3 a.m. by this time. He said, I was funny in high school. I wanted to find out if I still was, to which the answer was, no, you're not. And I think his firm got into financial difficulties and he killed himself just to bring everybody down. But he took over after I finished.
Fucking hell. All right, we got to wrap up, so we've got to fly through this list. Arnold Brown.
Arnold, well, we all know Arnold Brown. Why not? Still going. Do you know Arnold Brown? Oh, no. Going to Arnold Brown on another occasion then.
Bob Flagg,
yeah. He was a founding member of Alternative Cabaret.
Phil Monick or Monick?
Yeah, he was, I think he was an advertising copywriter.
Simon McBurney and Sandy.
Well, Simon, I think that's Sandy Toswig. Simon McBurney, of course, is a famous actor now.
So they did they do like sketch or something?
I think so, yeah. I don't know.
Brian Beck.
I don't know who that was.
And then something called The Review is crossed out and replaced with Jimmy and Clive.
That's Jimmy Mulville and Clive Anderson, I think.
Oh, my God.
Stars of Cambridge Footlights or Oxford.
Wow.
I think
Clive Anderson is one of those guys who, like, he's so unassuming, and you wouldn't think, like, why is he such a part of comedy history? And it's because of things like this, isn't it?
Well, yeah, he was, you know, I think they were Footlights. I think they were Cambridge and that, you know.
Ed Sherman.
I can't remember.
Nina Feinberg.
Oh, God.
Singer.
Yeah.
John Keefe.
Nope.
Harry Dickman.
Nope.
Brian. Just
no.
As Brian. And then it says LCDEASBB.
I don't know what that means.
LC/DE/AS. That might be you.
Yeah.
/BB. And then the list gets cut off. That's at 22. And there seems to be more after that. And I haven't seen a mention of Rick
and
Age.
Yeah, I think Emma Thompson was on that night as well, as I recall.
And Rick and Aid, were they on that?
No, they weren't there. They didn't turn up until a few months later.
Right. So that's a bit of comedy history there with Alexi's live reaction to the list.
Yeah.
I'll post a picture of that on the Patreon or just go to Instagram and follow the Comedy Store London. Right.
It was, I don't know, we're over our time really, but it was... one of the things I said at one of the live podcasts was that, when I've just done Mark Steele's podcast, and Mark was saying how he, before he got into it, He thought the comedy was magic. He couldn't see how you did it until he studied it and found a way. It just seemed, you know, like a piece of magic that you could think of these things and then say these things. Mm. And then I said, I had the same feeling when I watched Robin Williams, that I couldn't see how he was
doing
it.
Yeah, we spoke about this in the last episode.
And then I watched him and finally I worked out what it was. But I never said what it was. And then Adam, the technician, came to me afterwards because he's interested in comedy and said, how did he do it? You know, what was the trick with Robin Williams? Because I hadn't said what it was. And what I figured out that what Robin did was that it seemed like that he was just making this incredible material up on the spot. But what it was that he had about, I'll say, 3 hours of material in his head, bits. And what he would do with it, he'd just swap them around. And so there was no formal beginning or end to his act, but he had all these bits of material and he would just, it appeared right. that he was making this stuff up, but it wasn't. It was all bits that had been worked out and he just put them in different order, really, which, oh, you know, which still was just impressed me even more in a way. But then Adam also said that there's a guy called Abandoned Man.
Yeah, he's an improvised rapper.
Yeah, and Adam said that he does genuinely appear to make it all up. He's very funny.
Yeah.
And make it all up on the spot, really, which I find hard to believe. But
I keep threatening you with doing an improv scene one of these days if we ever run out of things to say.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, after an improv show, every time without fail, you'll have someone come up to you and go, come on, that was scripted. You didn't make that up.
But you do have bits, don't you? No, really. It's all entirely made up.
It's technique. You know, you study the art of making shit up, but it's like, if this, then what? You know? And it's the art of, like, just agreeing with conceits and premises. And you know, it's your story writing, your playwriting on the fly. But we all know how a story works. We all know how a narrative arc should work. So if you're about halfway through your show, you should probably be about halfway through your story arc. And, you know, the hero needs to be having a bit of a crisis at this moment. You know, if you're like near the end, you're like, okay, how do we climax this show? So there's you learn the techniques and you learn about how to agree with each other and you make shit up. The impressive thing about Abandoned Man is he's on his own up there. And you'll say, everyone pull something random out of your bag and everyone will hold a thing up in the air. And he'll walk around the room and do a rhyme for each item he sees.
Yeah.
Rap about all these different things. But again, that's practice. Anyone can learn how to rhyme. Of course, he might have stored in his head a few little licks and riffs that he goes to fill in gaps. But it's easy to come up with a rhyme on the spot. You know, vapor, paper. Okay.
Right.
Pen. Sven.
Sten. Gun.
Den. Yeah.
9mm.
So yeah, he does make it all up. Abandoned Man doesn't have pre-written verses and stuff.
Crazy.
It is very impressive. But you also have, you know, if you build the structure. I used to be in an improv band called Panicky Tack, and you have a structure. We'd have songs written, but the lyrics weren't written. But we knew what the melody was. We knew how many syllables we had to fit into that line, or roughly. And so it makes the job much easier when a lot of the legwork is done, like the structure, the scaffolding that goes underneath your song.
Right.
And you just, some people just have natural talent.
Right. You know? I stopped listening to that about half an hour ago, but I didn't. That's unnecessarily cruel. I was listening.
It's time to go, XT.
Yes, it is time to go. Well, we'll look more into this. I don't like the idea of people making funny stuff up on the spot.
I feel us getting closer to doing an improv scene together.
It's coming, people. It's coming.
Think of a film club movie for next week, if you can. We'll announce it next week, not to watch it.
I can hear Wilf in the background there. He's getting very noisy.
Love you, Wilf. Hi, Wilf. Support us on Patreon, follow us on the socials, LXLpod, email us at gmail, LXLpodcast@gmail.com.
All right, yeah, thank you for, if you've stuck through to the end of this particularly free-flowing episode of What is it? Lex Sale Podcast.
Yeah, that's the name of the show, mate.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Free Palestine.
You've been listening to the Alexi Sale Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.